This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast, the Becker Business Minute Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by a brilliant leader in the sort of private debt, private credit world, Faraz Kamran from Twinbrook Capital. Faraz is going to talk today about the deal market today, particularly in healthcare, what it means to have higher leverage or what leverage ratios look like, what it means when interest rates rise, and a lot more, and sort of fragility of companies and what they should be thinking about and so forth. Faraz, can you take a moment? Tell us about yourself, your career in Twinbrook. Then we'll talk about what you're seeing in the market.
Thanks, Scott. Pleasure to be on. Twinbrook Capital Partners itself, we really formed it to target lower middle market private equity backed companies. And that's usually EBITDA size between $5 million and $30 million. And the idea was try to bring that type of focus, relationship lending with a certain hold size to bear in that environment and really support our clients. You know, I think everyone has seen, you know, private credit has come more and more in vogue. I think, you know, 8 years ago, it was a little bit more nascent. I think what we had seen is there was a lot of good lenders in private credit that was really floating up, you know, doing bigger and bigger deals. And that lower part of the middle market still has a tremendous amount of interest by private equity groups and LPs that want to invest in both equity and debt. And we saw a natural opening. And I think that, you know, the team has, some of us have worked together for up to 25 years. And so the idea of a cohesive strategy to target the market, obviously a lot of, limited partner interest in the space, as well as we partnered with Angelo Gordon, who's been, you know, a great partner to us. And then our Rolodex, having done this in the middle market for over 20 years with private equity names, so forth, you know, seen a lot of, frankly, good and bad markets and have been tried to be good partners in those, was really our thought process in forming it and really growing it at a very fast clip. We're up to, I think, in 8 years, we've deployed over $27 billion from a standing start. So it's been a great story.
I mean, that's literally amazing what you've accomplished, and we've watched it. Congratulations. Talk about what you're seeing in the market today. Are deals still getting done? How do people look at leverage ratios? Are they concerned about them? How do companies stay sort of out of debt covenant problems or anti-fragile in a challenging time? Talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing in the market today.
Yeah, you know, it's always an interesting part of the market, and there's a few things driving it, right? I mean, we just came out of COVID approximately 3 years ago, and that itself was own challenges, and we could talk about that. You know, taking a step back, you know, what we pride ourselves on and what we've built ourselves a business on is, look, we are trying to be not too high, not too low, not overreact, but really try to help our clients in both bad and good situations. And there's a few things happening. One, obviously, we have not seen these type of rates in the market for quite a while. And if you think about it, the last real big recession was over 15 years ago. You know, you've had some minor hiccups, obviously COVID, but there's a lot of people that haven't been through a recession. There's a lot of people that haven't seen rates up this high. I mean, you know, 11, you're paying 11% on first lien debt, where you were paying maybe 6% as early as a year ago, you know, or even 9 months ago. So what I've been telling my clients is a few things. One, absolutely, you know, we were closing deals in April of 2020, right after the lockdown, because we want to be thoughtful with our clients. The last thing you want to do is when things get tough, run for the hills. You want to be there for your client. You want to be thoughtful and creative. And so we're telling people, look, we're still open for business. We're still doing deals. Let's think through some of the pitfalls here. One is, look, healthcare is always going to be a little bit more muted from a recessionary or macroeconomic environment, but it's still exposed to a degree. So let's be thoughtful and structure around that. Two, you know, a leverage issue we can work through if it's a good credit, if, you know, the private equity firm and the management team are really focused, we can work ourselves out of that. Interest coverage, you know, fixed charge coverage, that measures liquidity. And in a rising rate environment, the interest burden, and remember, this is only for 6 months. We haven't even hit 12 months of this massive interest burden that these companies are going to have. Liquidity is oxygen to the company. And so when you start paying more and more of your free cash flow, just the interest, because, you know, amortization is 1% a year. So that is really where we're focusing people, saying, look, service business, no capital expenditures. This is your coverage of interest and fixed charges. But if you have capital expenditures, you're doing de novos, we got to be really thoughtful about this. And the good news is, look, in the lower middle market, for sure, most companies, you know, debt to equity was 50-50 or frankly lower than 50-50. So people see, like, there's a real return for that equity investment. And maybe the last thing I tell people is, look, these rates, in my opinion, probably won't be here in 2 years. So let's just figure out the next 18 to 24 months. How do you buy a platform? How do you get through bolt-on acquisitions? And there are different levers we can pull, right? And we'll be their partners now, and we'll be their partners in 2 years from now.
Your point on the interest rate environment is so important, because as rates go up 500 basis points, 600 basis points, all of a sudden a company with $50 million in debt, for example, has got, you know, $5 to $6 million a year in just interest payments. And that eats into most companies' free cash flow a significant amount. We're seeing, in sort of what we're seeing out there, more and more companies having discussions with their financiers, with their bankers, about debt covenants and so forth. And I know you don't want to talk about your own portfolio very much, but out there in the universe, do you find that that's the case, that there's more discussions around debt covenants than there's been in some time? Or is it just inevitable with rates going up that much?
Exactly. Because, look, there's a few things happening, right? It's even healthy companies are having these discussions, because at the end of the day, you know, a lot of our deals do have two covenants. They have fixed charge and leverage. And the idea is that, look, not only is the interest burden going up, wage pressures are coming. So you're obviously having to pay more. So there's a lot of pressure on profit margins, a lot of pressure on the bottom line. And even healthy companies, maybe it slows them down. Maybe they stop doing strategic things. Companies that had a hiccup, now you're just throwing gasoline in the fire, right? And the idea is, look, you know, this is what I told my clients during COVID. Covenants are marks on a piece of paper, right? Like, we will work through after the lockdowns lifted and everything else. You got to preserve liquidity. And that's kind of the same conversation. We're saying, look, yeah, let's talk about leverage. Let's talk about this. But how do we get out of this hole? How are we going to get oxygen back to this company? Certain cases to just, you know, frankly, survive, and certain cases to really pivot your business to start doing acquisitions again. And the problem is, when you're an acquisitive like you are as a private equity platform, it's that psychology of a seller still hasn't moved enough, given the markets, to really understand that, look, you know, you can still get a good multiple. You may not be getting the great multiple you got 9 months ago. And so there's a lot of education here taking place between the private equity folks and their sellers. And, you know, in the lower middle market, majority of our deals, the private equity firm is the first institutional capital. So you're having some real dialogue with the entrepreneur, with the management team, to say, look, this is why we think this, you know, will work. And obviously, if you can roll over more equity, if you can do seller paper, or you can do a holdco note that's all PIK, that helps tremendously in this environment.
And talk for a moment about the equity to debt mix. We just saw a deal done where it was literally 50% equity coming in from the private equity fund and some of the investors, and 50% debt. And then what are you seeing there, and what are you seeing in terms of multiples? Any sense of those couple of issues?
Yeah, you know, on the debt multiples, you know, we're in a strange market, right? Like, normally you would set the debt multiple based on the credit and your view of it. Here, most lenders, the first thing you do is run an analysis on interest coverage and fixed charge coverage. And then you almost back into a leverage for that deal, because you say, look, if you're trying to achieve either a 2x interest coverage or a 1.8, this is the leverage that it can bear, right? If it's a heavy CapEx business, then you obviously do the fixed charges and you come up with, this is our target, this is how much leverage. So in today's environment, and I say that today because things continue to change, you know, in today's environment, most deals on a unitranche or first, you know, one stop are being done at 4.5 to 4.75. There's a few that are maybe at 5x at best, but no one's really going above that. And if you have a strategic way of, like I said, an LP who will bring in holdco PIK notes, or some other way of bringing in additional debt where it's not a cash burden, then I think you're better off positioned. Or again, a lot of these sellers do want, I think, you know, a lot of our private equity firms want the seller to have skin in the game. We do as well. And so it's maybe tweaking that 30% roll to 40% roll, or doing something else a little bit creative and unique that is moving the needle. And so that's really what we're seeing, because unfortunately rates are not coming down anytime soon. And so there are still good deals to be done. There are still reasons strategically why someone wants to sell in this market. And so we want to support our clients that have said, look, this is where we want to go. And as far as debt to equity, you know, I would tell you, you know, on the healthcare side, we've definitely always been, our average is lower than 40% debt to equity. I think that'll continue. I think that, you know, you will still have to pay up for a good platform, and maybe hopefully you can get a good, you know, better deal on some of the add-ons you're doing. But otherwise, I think that will continue to be something we see, which is that debt to equity be below 40%, whether it's, you know, preferred equity and common equity, whether it's whole co-pick, there's going to be something that fills that hole, that leverage is kind of stepped back a full turn to a turn and a half than it was a year ago.
And so important to keeping things from being too fragile. And you mentioned 4 to 5 times EBITDA sort of debt, is I think what I heard you say, and it's going to differ based on company, based on situation, based on fragility. And then also ways to keep valuations high. One of the ways that people do that is by having the sellers, the founders, whoever the original, whoever owns the company now, roll over a little bit more equity. So they might be able to keep valuations high, but it means they're going to have more skin in the game to do so. If they want to maximize valuations, it's probably going to mean them taking a bigger equity rollover too, so there's not as much cash out by the lenders and by the private equity sponsors.
Exactly. And that's why, again, I really like the lower middle market, right? Because, you know, it is a bespoke conversation. It is each, you know, private equity firm having its own conversation with that, you know, seller, entrepreneur, management team to really work out a deal that hopefully is a win-win. Because again, you know, if you built up a business, you still think very highly of that business. You still love that business. And so it should be, you know, very good, I think, overall that you say, look, roll over more now. Maybe they can work out an agreement that a while down the road, they can start kind of maybe cashing them out or something else when the rates are better and the leverage is available. But I think there is actually receptivity on the other side because people view their businesses as high quality. They do want to achieve a certain multiple. And if that means they have to roll over a bit more, again, you're not going from, you know, 10% rollover to 40%. That's not a huge change, or that's a huge change. Normally, if a seller is rolling over 25 to 30, you're asking them roll over 35 or 40. So it's not a massive change. It's just incrementally more than you would normally do.
When you look at sellers selling into this market, and I know it's all over the board, do you get a sense of sellers that are a little bit concerned that they've had some losses in their own portfolio, so they're trying to de-risk some, or really hell-bent on growth? And you mentioned that these are all bespoke conversations, so they're all individual, one-off. What do you see out there in the temperature of your sellers? What does that look like, particularly first-time sellers into private equity versus private equity funds that are selling again? What do you hear from some of the – and I know often you're one step away from those discussions because you're working through a private equity fund. But what do you see from the founders, the sellers, and so forth in terms of personal attitude and what they're looking for today?
Yeah, you know, and we are one step removed when we definitely ask that question, right? Because the first thought is, look, you know, if you – have a business now and it's doing well, why not hold it for another 2 years and sell it then for a higher multiple, right? And so if you're an individual or a management team and you're selling, there are strategic reasons, right? Whether there's succession issues or you've kind of tapped out, you need capital to keep growing. So there's a growth path. They just don't have the wherewithal, whether it's sophistication or just access to capital to do it. Obviously, there's going to be very specific things that a private equity firm can bring, right? Not only financial sophistication and capital, but they have Rolodexes, they have other ways of sourcing ideas or deals that, you know, an individual or management team can't do. On the private equity side, you know, again, I think there are very specific reasons that's fund by fund that they decide that, look, for our specific reason, the board has decided that it's time to sell. And the idea being is, you know, if you've done a good job, if you've grown a company from, let's say, 5 of EBITDA to 30 of EBITDA, you know, look, you may not be able to sell it at the umpteenth level of multiple, but as I said, good companies are still getting good multiples, you know, that have all that credit, all that growth trajectory that people are used to seeing, they're still going to get a good multiple. They're not getting a heavy discount. And so that's where people have decided strategically, okay, is this the right time for me to launch something, you know, and really either you make it up, you know, as a buyer, you just have to put more equity in and hope that over time, you know, as the leverage market opens up, as you can keep doing either add-on acquisition or de novos, you'll average that down. And that's, again, most people are not looking to normally put a ton of leverage on their deals to begin with. You know, no one in the lower middle market is doing 7x leverage, even the best times. So there is this nature of, look, 1 + 1 = 3, and we have to both improve the operations and the margin of the company organically, and then grow, whether it's de novo or acquisition. So I think there's multiple levers that people are looking at, and it's a very unique decision, I think, and the board kind of makes it. And for me, I look at that and I say, look, you guys have run this company, you guys have grown and done everything. So if you decide to launch it, especially if it's one of ours, you know, I tell our clients, one of the things we do is we want to support you guys in an exit. That's the partnership we have. And if we can keep the deal, great. If not, we still want to give our experiences to the market that it's been a good journey. We like the management team. And, you know, there's a good platform.
But your point, I mean, the ideal goal is it's 1 + 1 = 3. And so important to be able to make that happen, to have that creativity, to not have those high leverage ratios. Like you mentioned, no one's doing it 7 times anyways. But to try and keep yourself in a spot where the company's got some flexibility so they don't feel like they can't go after ideas, they can't go after things because they're so overloaded with debt and even preferred equity and so forth.
Exactly. And that's where I go back to the beginning, right? That the liquidity is, you know, it's that old thing of, you know, how many days can you survive without food and how many minutes can you survive without air? And that's leverage versus liquidity. You know, liquidity, if there's a very tight liquidity already, and then on top of that, you have a hiccup or some growing pains, which again, a lot of platforms will have because it's lower middle market. There's never a linear straight path to growth. There's always going to be a little bit of ebbs and flows. And you get, you know, into trouble, then yes, you are, you know, having very difficult discussions with your lender, i.e., can you defer interest and principal, which it becomes extremely hard for a lender to do, or you're on the hook to really keep injecting equity, you know, maybe for a few quarters, right, for liquidity until you can kind of right-size the ship. And that's why I think everyone is kind of taking a step back, trying to assess the market. You know, the first quarter has been very slow from a healthcare auctions perspective that iBanks were launching, because I think everyone's trying to figure out where the market's at, what makes sense. And I think, you know, you'll see it continue to ramp more and more as the quarters go by, not because the debt markets are opening up necessarily, but people will feel more sure of the footing of, okay, this is what I can get done. Some of that psychological communication has been done by maybe the investment banker to the seller. So when I come in, we can have a more robust discussion of, okay, what else are you willing to do here? Because I can only get this much leverage and pay you X, and I can't write the entire equity check. So let's be partners here. So I think that'll continue. But yes, that's why I think you're taking a little bit of a pause in this market.
Faraz, I want to thank you as joining us, as always, on the Becker Private Equity Podcast, the Becker Business Minute Podcast. It's amazing what you and your team have accomplished over the last 8 years. Simply amazing. A brilliant group of people. Faraz, tell us for a moment, where people can learn more about you and about Twinbrook Capital?
Yeah, you know, our website is twincp.com, or you can just put in Twinbrook. But, you know, for us, we try to be an open book. We you know, want to have a conversation if there's something that's pending, if you're an equity sponsor we haven't worked with before. But outside of that, Scott, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you again. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.